Andre! Andre! Wake up, buddy!
I don't want to go to school, Mama.
Andre! Wake up, buddy! It's time to do the show!
Five more minutes, hit the snooze.
Andre! Come on, buddy! You can do this!
What's going on?
That's right! Here is your host of the Negative Positives Podcast, all the way from sunny California, Andre Dominguez.
Welcome back to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 217. I am your co-host, Andre Dominguez, coming at you from Los Angeles, California, with another solo show. Today, I kind of want to talk about something that I've been sort of, you know, leading up to for a decent while now, which is my kind of mini review of version 1.0 of the FilmLab app. The Android version of the FilmLab app by Abe Fettig. Now, full disclosure, I was a Kickstarter backer of the FilmLab app back when Abe launched it on Kickstarter. You guys may remember the interview that he had with the folks at Sunny 16 podcast a decent while ago when he was still kind of, you know, in the process of coding everything out and you know, leaving his previous job to work on it full time. And I had the very wonderful pleasure of meeting Abe in person at the 2019 Film Photography Paideia in San Clemente. And I'd kind of like lost access to the, you know, the ongoing kind of test flight version of the software because it was tied to my Kickstarter account, which was using my university email address and all that jazz. So Abe went ahead and gave me a discount code for the app. And since then, as you guys have probably seen in my posting within the Facebook group, I have been spending not every day, but a decent amount of time every week, just kind of putting it through its paces, throwing a bunch of different film types and formats and sizes at it, seeing how this version 1 really shapes up. So overall kind of impressions, where do I sort of see the software right now? Honestly, it's a really, really good start. I had a conversation with Abe over the phone a few days ago to make sure that, you know, I was getting all my information correct, that certain things that I had encountered sort of difficulty-wise were not simply just user error, and because I didn't want to spread any misinformation about the app. You know, he's working extremely hard on this, and I simultaneously want to give my honest opinion on it, but also, you know, make sure that before I start talking about it to what now is a relatively large audience, that I'm getting stuff right. So let's kind of jump into a little bit about how it works. Obviously, the FilmLab app is a smartphone app now available both on iOS and on Android, as Android users had to wait a little while longer for version 1.0 to come out. But essentially what you do, the concept is that you use the raw image capability of modern smartphones to take what I believe are multiple different images, and it kind of sort of like stitches them into one, tries to get the maximum amount of dynamic range to essentially, you know, give you this kind of composite raw file in order to work with. Now obviously you have to have the negative backlit in some fashion. I have been using my rather inexpensive, I think it was like $25 more or less, light table that I bought on Amazon. If you guys are interested in knowing which one it is that I use, I think, you know, I posted it somewhere in the Facebook group, but I can pull that back up. The thing that I really like about that light table is that it gets extremely bright and you can adjust the brightness. Obviously, your phone's camera is having to take a picture of this, and as we all know, the low light capabilities of smartphone cameras, although they've gotten so much better than they used to be, are still not the greatest things in the world. So the more light that you can put through that negative, the better. Also, a kind of tip in order to minimize the number of reflections that are on the surface of the film, I actually, put the light table, here on my bed, crank it up to the max brightness, and turn off all the rest of the lights in the room so that there's nothing reflecting off of the surface of the film or the surface of the print file, because I'm usually just doing this with the film inside the print file itself. I don't really tend to kind of take the negative out. I'm not sure if that affects image quality. I don't think so. People make contact sheets with the stuff, with the film inside of the print file, so I can't imagine that it would have too detrimental an effect on the actual image quality. But once you take the picture, you actually have the choice between color negative, black and white, and positive slide film. It takes a picture, has a little status bar that says capturing and then processing, and then it gives you a really simple but robust kind of editing system with a few sliders. So on the black and white slide, you've got like a contrast and an exposure slider. At this current point right now, it doesn't have like as much minutia in terms of the changes that you can make as something like Snapseed, which is sort of my main mobile editing app for my Android-based phone. But really, on the black and white side, that's the main thing that I really need when I'm doing this kind of like quick scan with my phone, is just adjusting the exposure, getting it, to the density that I want, and usually increasing the contrast a little bit, just because, for my black and white images, I like things pretty contrasty. On the color negative side, I think is really where things start to kind of shine with the app, because I'm sure that we've all taken, pictures of a backlight illuminated black and white negative, and then just gone into whatever editing app that we have on our phone and flip the curves to invert it. But the color part is really where I think Abe gets to sort of flex his color science muscles that he's developed over these several months of working on the app. Selecting the color negative mode, it'll automatically start, inverting the orange mask and getting, in my opinion, pretty darn good looking, well colored images straight off the bat. Taking the picture and kind of getting into the editing portion of that happens very similarly. In addition to your exposure and contrast sliders, you then also have two sliders for your basic color and tint adjustment, and they work pretty fine for my applications at least. I'm pretty open about the fact that I really suck and don't enjoy color correcting color negative film, and the fact that I really didn't have a big issue with doing it in the app kind of says a lot. It's simple, but it in my cases really gets the job done. Last but not least, in the slide category, once again, some people may be thinking like, oh well, if you've got a really bright light table and you've got your smartphone, why don't you just take a picture of the of the backlight illuminated slide? Yeah, 100% perfectly reasonable question. However, in my experience, perhaps, you know, just with my phone and the camera that's in my phone and my overall lack of ability to to really do kind of good color correcting, the colors that I get from just taking a picture of a slide on a light table with my phone never come out the way that I want to color-wise. Whereas with the FilmLab app in its current state, I really don't have to do almost anything. I think all I needed to do was sort of warm them up just a tad. The slides were coming out a little bit blue, the medium format Provia 100F that I shot through the Fuji GW690. Not rest in peace. I sold it to a friend of the show, Jake Rose. But yeah, overall, like I preferred using the FilmLab app to scan the slide film rather than just taking the picture, just because it was already getting me kind of like 90% of the way there in terms of sort of what I was seeing with my eye color-wise, and then I just needed to warm them up just a bit to kind of get rid of that sort of bluish cool cast. Now, what are kind of some applications for this app, some considerations, as well as where I see this fitting into my workflow in particular. Kind of primary sort of application that I see is, well, kind of two things. One is making just quick and dirty contact sheets. Mike and I were actually talking recently about the fact that having just sort of a digital contact sheet, especially if you use some kind of like reference number system, you know, written on the print file itself, and then like just renaming that image file the name of that reference number, would actually be a fantastic way of being able to just, you know, pull up your folders of your scans and then just flip through the actual contact sheets themselves, these digital, you know, entire print file contact sheets, and be able to see at a quick glance whether it's black and white, color negative, or slide film, what is on that roll, so that you can then go back and find a particular scan file or find a particular negative if you want to then go and make prints in the darkroom with that negative. So that's, I think, one of the kind of most interesting and most useful applications. Alternatively, just using it kind of as a proofing tool, if your needs in terms of like quality and fidelity are much higher than mine are, you may not want to, you know, kind of be spending the time, you know, sitting there with a good quality light table and you know, scanning each individual frame. But you may just want to be able to just kind of hover the phone over just in the normal preview mode to kind of see your images, especially if you're working with color negative, for example. But black and white too, you know, there are still some times where, you know, I'm looking at a print file of black and white negatives, especially 35mm, just by the very fact that they're smaller, that, you know, I found myself, you know, my light table actually sits here on my bedside table, and it's just always plugged in. So I just, you know, hit the power button, you know, pull out a print file, just pull out the FilmLab app, and then just kind of hover it over to get a quick glance. So those are kind of like the main applications that I see people using, depending on what kind of a user you are. In terms of sort of slight concerns, or just like, you know, slight bits of constructive criticism or things that, having spoken to Abe, I already know that he's working on. In my case in particular, with the Android version and with my phone, I had a difficult time scanning 35mm film, simply because the like minimum focusing distance was such that I couldn't get close enough to the negative without it going kind of all blurry, it being out of focus. which really kind of made it frustrating because it limited the quality of scans that I could get with 35. Obviously, medium format was great. Large format is even easier. It's just a bigger negative. But with the 35, I was really struggling. So my kind of workaround was using the loop that I have. It's let me see. It is a Carson brand 7x loop, and it's actually, you know, pretty big. It's about like 3.5, maybe 4 inches in diameter. And what that allowed me to do actually was just place that right on top of the print file on the light table, and then just set my phone on top of it to get kind of like a magnified view of each individual 35 millimeter frame. Now, from the pictures that I believe I posted maybe about a week ago in the Facebook group, you will notice that doing that does distort the image quite heavily. It gives it, you know, a pincushion distortion, and going into the crop you know, feature, so that you can actually select the within like the entire picture, select the frame, you know, match like the corners of the little white box that it creates, so you can just crop out the picture itself that you want to do. Because of that pin cushion distortion, like, you'll lose like a tiny little sliver, which is fine. Usually when I'm shooting 35, and especially if I'm shooting with a rangefinder, knowing that, you know, I like printing to 5x7 and 8x10, I usually give myself a little bit of extra room to crop. You know, I'm not leaving tons of room and just being like, oh, I'll crop and post. But like, you know, I'll usually frame something up and maybe take a step back or just give myself a little bit of room, knowing that that 8x10 crop in the darkroom is sometimes going to be significant. But yeah, so that's a little bit of a workaround. I have been informed by Abe that he is working on that. But for right now, if you are currently using the version 1 Android version of the FilmLab app and you're encountering that same problem, if you do have a loop already, I would say, you know, give it a shot. See if that kind of magnification of the small 35 millimeter frames and the distortion is something that you're okay with. Last but not least, kind of where does this fit into my workflow? As some of you guys know, my PacOn is not doing super well. It is kind of bunching together 3 frames into one. Something wrong with the frame spacing detection. I still haven't kind of really done a whole lot of research on the issue with the Kodak PacOn users film group in Facebook. Nor have I reached out to AAA Imaging to kind of inquire as to the cost of potentially repairing it, hopefully not replacing it, just because there's other stuff that I'm going to be spending money on soon, including my M2 in the not-too-distant future. But with that in mind, I really have been kind of thinking about, you know, what is my workflow going to look like in terms of scanning, in terms of printing, and I've kind of gotten to the point right now with my distaste of scanning and with how impressed I am at the quality of the FilmLab app, that, you know, for just as I develop film on my lunch break at the office and then bring it back and sleeve it, medium format, I don't really do a whole lot of large format at all, really, but medium format, I'm pretty much just gonna be, you know, as it's shot and as it's developed, doing a quick scan with the FilmLab app so that I can throw it up in Instagram stories, put it on the Facebook group, things like that. If I want to, you know, include those images like in my feed, I probably will run it through the V600, the Epson V600 flatbed scanner that I have. If I want to make a darkroom print, obviously I'll you know, make a darkroom print. But that's really going to save me so much time, medium format wise, not having to deal as often with the really kind of horrible Epson negative holders for medium format, and just how slow that entire process is. That's kind of how I see it, you know, being used for medium format film with my shooting. 35 is a little bit more of a toss-up. The fact right now with the current version that I do have that workaround of using the loop makes it a little bit slower, and obviously shooting, you know, having to scan 12 images for a roll of medium format in comparison to 36 with 35 is obviously a big difference time-wise. Add to that the fact that I'm having to kind of like align up a loop and then a phone kind of sitting on top of that loop makes it so that, you know, 35 just takes longer. Now, the benefit of being able to have that kind of live preview is that it's really getting me to kind of lean hard into that philosophy of like, oh, well, like, you know, why do you have to scan all of them right now? If I can kind of look through the entire 36 images, already have, especially with color negative, have it kind of flipped color-wise and be able to get like a pretty good approximation of what the final image is going to look like just by hovering my phone over it, I can then choose maybe like in a roll of 36 exposures, I can choose maybe the 6 or 7 that I actually want to spend a few minutes running it through the app, doing that kind of basic scan. So 35, like, given the fact that my pack-on is currently out of commission, I'm probably going to be doing that, you know, doing this sort of hover over live preview for the entire roll, and then selecting maybe like, you know, 10, 12 that I actually want to use the loop to magnify, invert, crop, make my little kind of levels adjustments, and then post to the Facebook group and things like that. But yeah, I am excited. I hope this kind of loosely organized, rambly mini early bird review of the first version of the Film Lab app was, if not entertaining, at least semi-informative to you guys out there. I would encourage you to give it a shot. It is a paid app. I don't recall how much it costs, but if I can kind of, you know, use this opportunity that I'm talking about it to, you know, appeal to hopefully your enthusiasm for the film community and for an individual in the community that is really kind of pouring his heart and soul into this technology, really do consider, you know, throwing him a few dollars and trying this out, even if it ends up not being a huge part of your workflow the way that I envision it being a pretty significant part of mine. But beyond that, in terms of kind of future applications, obviously we've talked a lot about the fact that somebody out there needs to create a better scanning solution. And thankfully we have people like Abe and we have people like Hamish making, you know, products like the Film Lab app and like the Pixelator that are kind of helping with this main sort of bottleneck of the film photography workflow these days. But really kind of the dream, at least my dream, is a modern pack-on style scanner that can do at the very least 35 and 120. And this kind of technology that Abe is producing, really kind of wrapping his head around, you know, composite imaging and, you know, raw file manipulation and the color science and, you know, potentially even someday in the future, like, you know, custom profiles for different film stocks is really what, you know, Kodak was doing back in the day in order to make the scanners that they made. And, you know, what Epson did with their flatbed scanners, what Plustek does. And so I really, you know, hope that this technology continues to advance. And we obviously kind of see that companies like Epson are not sort of jumping at the chance to kind of improve any of their film scanners. We're kind of stuck with, you know, rather old technology and old scanners that haven't been updated in years and years and years, and nothing really kind of seems to indicate that these companies are wanting to make them better and make them more efficient. So it's exciting. We could see, you know, this technology be just improved as time goes on, and who knows, maybe one day we'll see Mr. Fettig, you know, coming out with a modern day Pacon. Who knows? The future is an exciting place. But yeah, that's kind of my little mini review. If you have any questions about using it, feel free to shoot me a message. I'd be glad to kind of talk a little bit more about certain aspects of the app that I didn't get to, but I will kind of hand over the rest of the floor, well, not the rest of the floor, a few minutes over to Mr. Dustin Cogsdale, who has submitted a call-in camera review of the Minolta XD11 35mm SLR. So over to you, Dustin.
Welcome to another edition of On the Road Reviews. I'm Dustin Cogsdale. Today I'm going to be talking about the Minolta XD11. Minolta XD11, or XD in Japan, is a SLR from the late 70s to the mid 80s. It was Minolta's top of the line body during its production. It was the first camera to have both shutter and aperture priority mode and a fully metered manual mode. It was the last metal body that Minolta produced before they moved on to their plasticky X700 series, which is the reason I prefer this camera personally to those later models afterwards. It takes the Minolta SR mount, which is going to be their MC and MD Rokor lenses, which in my opinion are the best classic lenses out there for these Japanese SLRs. And this camera was actually used by Henry Benson, which was a famous photographer from the 60s, 70s, 80s. Traveled with the Beatles. He worked for National Geographic. As you can tell, I'm very enthusiastic about this camera. It's probably my favorite classic SLR out there. I'm gonna give you a couple things I like about this camera. You can see the shutter and the aperture in the viewfinder. It's got these little mirrors on the body that actually look down onto the lens and let you see what your settings are in the viewfinder. They even work in low light, which I think is pretty awesome. It's got a great meter. It's super accurate. I put it up against my Siconic L558, and they usually read super close to each other. It sometimes it's dead on, sometimes it's not, but they're generally very close. Excuse me. The meter also has these little LEDs inside that shine next to the shutter speed or the aperture that's going to be in play when you select it. I don't use the auto modes, the shutter priority or the aperture priority. I usually just use this camera in full manual. And even then, I feel like I'm on autopilot with this camera. It's just such a breeze to use. It's so easy to use. It's light for what it is. It's small. It's as small as the OM bodies. And I know this from experience, having taken it into the camera shop to compare. People talk about how those are the smallest cameras around. If you don't want to pay that OM1, OM2 premium, look at this camera, because it's just as small as those cameras, and it has the Minolta lenses, which there's a reason that people in the digital world are taking these lenses and adapting them to their digital cameras. Another thing I love about this camera is it has a split image finder. I love a split image finder on an SLR. That's just how I like to shoot. I feel like my focus, I hardly ever miss focus when I've got a split image finder in my camera. It's got an eyepiece shutter, which I thought was pretty cool. It's just this little switch that you switch, and it actually will close off your shutter in case you want to get long exposures and you don't want to worry about any light coming in the camera. Other words, you know, a lot of the old Canons had a little piece on the strap that you could put down and cover it with, but this actually has a shutter inside the camera. It's got a very nice, accurate plus and minus two-stop exposure compensation, and it has a O mode. I guess that stands for open, or I'm not exactly sure. I would have to look in the manual to see exactly what that means. But what it is a setting that you can put the camera on that sets the shutter to mechanical. It's a battery-operated camera because it is, you know, it does have electronics in it. But this O mode sets it to 1/100th of a second shutter speed so that you can shoot the camera mechanical if your battery dies, which I think is pretty great, especially since I shoot Acros and Fomapan 100 a lot. That means if my battery dies, I can just pop this to that O mode and shoot Sony 16 with no issues. A couple things I don't like about this camera was the cheap leatherette that it came with. Just like any old Japanese SLR or American box camera, whatever, it has crappy cheap leatherette. I pulled this leatherette off and rewrapped it. It was super easy to do that, but it peels, it cracks. Just something to be aware of. Would I recommend this camera? Hell yes, I would recommend this camera. As you can tell, I like this camera. It works great with me. It fits my hands. I think it's an awesome little camera, and I would have more of them if I could afford them, but the bodies have gone up considerably since I picked up this camera. I got it for around $60 with a Minolta MD Rokor 50 1.4. nowadays the body itself is going for close to $100, and then for a 1.4 you're looking at roughly the same thing. You can get it with the 1.7, which I have also, the 50 1.7. And that is an excellent lens in its own right. It's super clear, super sharp. I've seen it as low as $30 to $50. If you find a mint copy, you might pay a little bit more for that premium, but it's a fantastic camera, and I recommend everybody get out there and give it a shot. This has been On the Road Reviews. My name is Dustin Cogsdale. You can find my work on Instagram at For the Love of Grain, or you can find me on Facebook in the Negative Positives Podcast Facebook group or the Photography Print Swap Facebook group.
All right, thank you so much for that call-in camera review, Dustin. To everybody out there, just a quick reminder that we would strongly encourage you to call into the show. It doesn't have to be a camera review. We know that we've been receiving, you know, a decent amount of those, but really, if you have any comments, anything that you'd like to share, any announcements that you would like to share with our community, just leave us a call in, either through the Anchor app, which will limit you to 1 minute, but of course, just using the voice memo app in your phone, record a quick little message and email that to us at negpositives@gmail.com. All right, folks, so it is the time of the show that I'm going to wrap everything up. Of course, you can see my film and occasional watch photography on Instagram at AndreOnFilm. Be sure to email this podcast at negpositives@gmail.com with any, you know, questions, as I said, call-in camera reviews, anything else. Do join the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group in order to keep up to date with everything that's going on with our little community. Really, if you're not part of the Facebook group, you're missing half the fun. And last but not least, please be sure to follow Negative Positives on Instagram, which is, of course, run by friend of the show, Bryce Randall. Use the hashtag Negative Positives so that Bryce can share your images with the rest of us. And a quick little reminder that we are kind of prepping for our second annual Negative Positives double exposure challenge. The Google Forms for those should be kind of coming out soon. Sean Nelson is the one helping us out on that, and he should have those out very shortly. We have actually been getting actually a really great response from the other film photography podcasters who we challenged epically, throwing down the gauntlet to have you know, hopefully all of your favorite film photography podcasters, you know, battling to the death to see who will win the love and admiration of guest host, a guest judge of the show, M from Emulsive. So do stay tuned to that. Start reading up on kind of tips and watching YouTube videos about how to do multiple exposures. If you want to kind of catch up on those videos of like how to sort of at least increase the chance of aligning the frames correctly so that the frame spacing is as close as possible to equal, you know, head back into the Facebook group if somebody actually wants to do a little kind of public service, if somebody remembers what video that was or has a good idea of what to to write in the search bar, post that, and we might, you know, maybe pin that post in the Facebook group so that everybody can see as they kind of start prepping. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. We are very excited about both the listener version and the podcaster version. All right, everybody, thank you so much for sitting through what actually ended up being a rather long solo show for this week. Everybody stay positive and shoot some cool film photos. Take care.
Gutter Man Cave Production!